She mentioned that one day, and she's one of those pet owners who talks about her dog almost like it's a child, and she doesn't realize what she's saying because she's so used to, like, she doesn't think that she's not around dog people. So we were talking one day, and she's like, "Olivia just loved that dried bull penis, just chewed it right up." And I'm like, "What? Why are you?" I've never really owned a dog before, so I'm like, "Why are you giving her dried up bull penis?"
Oh, they
And
love it.
she's like, "Oh, that's right. You don't have a dog. Oh, yeah, it's just a thing. You know, it's a little thing she likes, and you can get them in different sizes and different colors." And I'm like,
I'm sure you can.
"Right?" And I'm literally having a bull. Pe is it? Are we really talking? Is it real? Is it real bull penis? I can't get over it. I
It's
thought
like
it.
dehydrated or something.
It's like all the tendons and stuff,
Oh,
yeah.
like pulled apart and then dehydrated. So there's, you know, different sizes. I heard they make them in 6 foot long sticks, and I was like, what
What?
kind of penis is that? Like, where?
Oh, God.
Anyways.
So let me ask you, so like when you go to the store, so do you get them at like normal pet stores, like PetSmart?
PetSmart here doesn't sell them. I go to like our local dog store because they have them.
Do they need a license to sell them?
I
I've got a
don't think
license for all
so.
that penis.
They also do like intestine stuff, and it just looks
Yeah.
exactly the same. It looks like a chew stick, but it's intestinal wall instead.
Intestinal wall?
Yeah.
Ugh.
So just like
What?
the lining of all the intestines, basically
Yeah.
dehydrated down together.
We gave Kirby an antler like the week that we moved into our house, and he loved it.
An antler.
Yeah, like a deer's antler.
Is that really durable? Like, if they chew
Yeah.
it, will it shard off?
Yeah, he like chewed all the marrow out of it. It was crazy. He went through it in like a day.
Wow. I just Googled the dried up bull penis. They kind of look like churros.
Yeah,
Yeah, that's a good
but not fluffy.
description.
That's
Man, if anyone looks at your internet search history.
I am never going to be able to look at a churro the same again. Oh, and I also found a graph. Here we go. Best bully sticks are always hand measured for consistent thickness.
You can get a stuffed aorta dog chew.
Ah, no.
Like,
No aortas.
aorta's the heart, isn't it? A stuffed aorta dog chew?
Oh,
What?
you have an abdominal aorta and you have
Okay,
aortas in your
but here's the thing.
heart.
It doesn't, you know, it doesn't look like it came out. It looks like a taquito.
Yep, it does.
Yeah.
Well, it
Looks
looks like a
harmless
taquito.
enough. Like, I'm expecting something out of like a horror movie where it's like bloody and pulsating. Like, it looks harmless. Wow.
This is a
This is.
whole other world that you have like exposed us to now.
Yeah. I've never owned a dog in my life.
Oh,
I
well, I
never
mean,
owned
the
a dog
best
that ate
for
one.
the first.
Wow. Man, that is wild. What else is there? So there's aorta, intestinal walls, dried up penises.
Tendons and ligaments of all kinds.
Ligaments?
Yeah.
What?
Well, they come in odor free. I bet those are not odor free.
Odor free.
You can get them
There's an
spiral.
option.
What do they smell like if they're not odor free?
Oh, they smell real bad.
Probably like dead rotting meat. Oh my gosh.
Oh.
They don't smell bad until they like chew on them, and then once they start chewing on them, it just releases
Oh.
all of the like
Juices.
nastiness that was built up inside.
I am never going to be able to look at sweet little Kirby again. Like, Kirby's just chewing on ligaments and shit.
I mean, we mostly just give him like dehydrated lamb liver, and
Oh,
that's.
just that instead. Okay. No big.
What? Dehydrated? That's what I mean. They're so blasé about it.
I mean, it's basically like the paleo diet for puppies, you know? You give them things that wolves would naturally eat in the wild.
Okay, these look like roof shingles. Seriously, it looks like roof shingles.
Oh my gosh. Well, I won't
Wow.
judge as I've had, you know, my hand in like a dead man's trachea and butt. I'm not gonna judge you on these bully sticks anymore.
And I've just mopped up jizz for a living at one point, so we come from such colorful backgrounds, you know?
I work in an animal ER, so I get to see lots of
Oh my
icky.
God, I'm
Lots of
sure.
icky.
How do you not get attached? like to the animals, like I'll being around all those sweet little faces, and you know, do you have to like put them down and stuff?
Sometimes. There are like one or two that have made me like tear up and cry, but I don't know, you get like semi-attached, but not so much. I guess you just learn how to balance it. Mm. Not so much that, you know, it's going to be like self-destruction when they pass or whatever, but we also get to save a lot of things, which is neat.
I can't, I am such a softy for animals, which is ironic because I'm not a vegetarian, but there's one thing that haunts me to this day. Are you familiar with the magazine Cat Fancy?
Yes.
Okay. In the back of Cat Fancy, there was a traumatizing experience that I had when I was a child. In the back, they have the classified section where they sell like cat toys and cat services. And I remember being a kid and seeing a black and white photo of a cat wheelchair. Mm-hmm. Where like it was almost like it was around their waist, like it was almost like a walker, but they could wear it. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing this paralyzed cat, black and white photo, sad face looking at the camera, and it traumatized me. And to this day, I still cannot, like, if I read a Cat Fancy or I read any sort of animal magazine, I have to skip the classifieds because I'm so afraid I'm going to see another picture of a paralyzed cat or some sort of dog, and it just breaks my heart. I just can't. Mm-hmm. So I'm very weak when it comes to animals.
Well, when you and I watched Babadook, remember, I covered my head with a blanket because I thought my bed was going after the dog. I'm like, I can't even watch, tell me what's done, can't even do it. No, it was too much.
Welcome back, everybody, to episode number 2 of the Girlfriend Bracket. It has been an exciting couple of days for us. We just released our first episode 2.5 days ago. We've gotten a lot of love from everybody. We've gotten comments and DMs and texts. What's it been like for you girls with all the attention? We're a success.
Woo!
Yeah, yay. It's been really good.
Yeah.
So far. I haven't gotten any negative feedback, so.
Yeah.
Sort of overwhelming.
Yeah, I guess. How so?
I don't know. I guess I just wasn't expecting people to be like, following you on Twitter. I was like, people are reading my tweets now, maybe? Good to know I'm not just talking to nothing anymore.
Yeah, I went from like 20 followers to like 100 in the span of 5 days. And I was like, oh, guess I should stop saying unintelligent things then, probably. Somebody's going to see it.
Hallie, what was it like for you?
I don't know. It was like, I've been on podcasts, like I've been on your podcast before. So I guess it wasn't that different from like the feedback that I've just received from being on your podcast. But like, I did speak to a couple of my friends at the Lady Planeswalker Society last night, just trying to like spread the word through word of mouth. And the people who listened said that they really enjoyed it. So I'm glad that we're reaching that audience.
I had Marshall Sutcliffe on the Deck Tees a while ago, and he said something very interesting to me. He said that when you're a content provider, eventually you get to a point where you have to make a declaration, and you say, this is what my blog is, this is what my podcast is, this is what is happening here. Mm-hmm. And if you like this, come along for the ride. If you don't like this, then it's probably not for you. And that's not to say that you're not looking for feedback, and that's not to say that you're not listening to feedback, but you do get to a point where you have to establish yourself, and you have to say, I'm grateful for what you're saying, but this is what we're doing here, and it's going to stay that way. Mm-hmm. And when I did the Deck Tease, it took me a really long time to get to that point where I felt like I could say that. Mm-hmm. And I really feel like with this show, we did it from the first episode. We were like, we're going to be for women, we're going to be opinionated, we're going to be fun, this is what it is. And I feel like the people who wanted that and understood that really, really liked it, and the people who maybe didn't enjoy it, it's just not for them, and that's okay. That's totally fine. I wish I saw more of that. Like, I feel like a lot of people nowadays, you know, they don't understand that some things just aren't for them. They feel like everything is for them. And so when something comes out that doesn't really reach them, you know, immediately it's bad. And I think that they're not mutually exclusive. We're like, just because something's not for you does not mean it's bad content. It's just not for you. And, you know, sometimes you just have to shrug and say, it's not for me, and go on with your day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for me, at least, it's been great seeing people who wouldn't normally listen to my previous show tune into this show. And it's also been great seeing people discover you all, because you're all fantastic.
I had one thing I wanted to clarify from last week that I got some feedback on. I guess, so when you were telling me your story about the guy who put the rhino down, as well as the Liliana, there was a few people who corrected what I said and told me that it is okay to talk to spectators, which is okay as a judge. But what I was trying to say was that I didn't think that was handled the best way it could be handled. Okay. So I just wanted to clarify that that is a thing that judges can do. We can talk to spectators, but for the most part, trying not to and trying to solve it on board is, in my opinion, just a little bit more straightforward, I guess.
Sure. I can appreciate that.
So. Got a few comments on that, that maybe that wasn't quite clear enough, but
I'm okay with it.
Yeah, just adding that in there.
All right. So we have a lot to cover this week. A lot of really cool things happened over the weekend and over the past couple of days, and we're going to hash it out. So first and foremost, a little convention, a little fair we've all heard of called PAX. I don't know.
Never
I hear right. I mean, I hear they're just starting out. I wish them well. But PAX East happened, and more specifically, there was a panel at PAX East having to do with Magic the Gathering. Ethan was there. Dave Humphreys was there. Liz Farrow, one of the brand folks, I believe, was there. I think she's with Brand. Yeah. Doug Beyer, who I love. He's the creative lore guy. And they gave us a lot to chew on. So I'm just going to go down the list because Gathering Magic made a nice little summary. Dragons of Tarkir, we got some spoilers. There was some Anna Fenza was revealed. Anna Fenza is dead.
She's a spirit.
I have to say, I don't normally play white, but I kind of like her. Like, I think she might have a home in some decks. Do you agree?
Yeah. I mean, white aggro deck or white-based aggro deck could definitely use something like that, just making all of those little creatures even bigger and scarier and harder to deal with.
Yeah, because that's always been a problem with the white decks, is like they're really great in those early stages, but eventually in the late game, you're just drawing 1/1s and you're just drawing 2/2s and putting them on the board. But if you have something like her out, you can transition into the middle and late game so much better, and that makes those white decks a little bit scarier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We got some more Dragon Lords spoiled. Ojutai, who is the Jeskai, or was the Jeskai... How do we classify this? It's his own clan now, right?
Yeah, I think all the clans are referred to by the names of the dragons, which gets kind of confusing because you could say, like, Atarka and either be referring to Atarka the dragon or Atarka's clan. So that could cause some confusion.
Do you think that they're going to make us start referring to the color combinations by the dragons? Like, you're going to have to call your blue-white deck an Ojutai deck?
It seemed like they were encouraging that during the panel when they were talking about it.
Oh, no.
So perhaps.
I hope not.
Yeah. I don't know. People seem to really like the Ravnica guild names. I think those will stick around.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, too. Mm. So then the other big spoiler was Sarkhan Unbroken, a teamer planeswalker, green, blue, and red. And are you guys excited about this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems sweet.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like teamer just hasn't gotten the love in Standard.
Yeah, I don't know. I know a lot of people are really excited about him. I guess I like that he draws cards, but I just like drawing cards in general. but the other ones, I mean, a 4/4 to block and or be on offense is cool. I think that his -8, like, I don't think entire decks are going to be revolving around, like, all of their dragon creatures or anything. Just my opinion. I think, like, one or two per deck will be kind of where people settle on, but...
Yeah, it's been interesting seeing all of these cards that have come out lately that have the additional effects where, like, you know, if you can choose to reveal a dragon when you cast them. And mm-hmm. I'm kind of going, what are the odds, like, that you're going to have that many dragons in your deck where you're just going to be able to reveal them? Like, you're going to need a deck based around dragons to really get those things off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, someone will do it.
And it will probably be your ex-boyfriend, Chris.
Well, yes, it probably would be.
He actually sent us a tweet. He listened to the show and he said, you know, I'm glad you liked the Kraken deck. I will brew something even weirder for you.
Yeah, he should make like a full-on all-dragon, no-nonsense deck. Then we can talk about it.
It's definitely his forte. I mean, the other day we were playing and he was wrecking me with Mist Hollow Griffin and Moreland Haunt, and it was obscene. So he can do it.
I remember we went to that PPTQ, Chris, and he was playing an Aristocrats, a variation of the Aristocrats, which he had just built. Like, I think he didn't even really, a day or two before?
Yeah, it was, like, not very long before. Could have even been that day, the night before. That's usually when he brews the best.
And he got what? I think he made it to top eight, didn't he?
I think so.
Ugh.
From what I remember.
Man, I wish I could do that. I just can't. I'm not a deck builder. I can't even do that with the decks that I net deck. Like, I'm so jealous.
I know, I am too, but I don't have it in me. Like, I try to think about card interactions and be like, well, this would be cool with this maybe, but I'm not sure. That's why when they showed during the GP what Mastery of the Unseen could do, I was like, wow, that's pretty insane. Because when I looked at the card when I got it, I was like, you know, this could have the potential to be a big pain in the butt.
Yeah. Well, we'll certainly talk about that card a little later. The next thing on the docket was Modern Masters 2015, where they revealed that Karn and Tarmogoyf will be reprinted again. That's good news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More Goyfs in circulation is never a bad thing.
let's hope that they've learned something from last time and that this actually makes the cost go down. That would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
So, are you ladies going to Vegas?
Yeah, most likely, yeah.
I will not be.
No.
Yeah.
Katie, I'll see you there, Hallie. I saw your tweet earlier. There's a really good Thai place in Vegas that I keep hearing about.
Is that a Lotus of Siam?
Yes.
Hearing about it too.
Yeah. So if I do end up going to Vegas, we'll have to go there sometime.
That sounds excellent. I just can't wait to eat all the food.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know, I would like to go to Vegas. The only problem I have is that I have a price point that I try not to go higher than whenever I travel to events. And the flight alone to go from Milwaukee to Vegas is past the price point. So, you know, then you factor in your hotels and your food and all that stuff, and there's just no way I could afford it. So, and if I go to Vegas, I would have to see Brittany. So I'd have to factor Brittany in, and there's just no way. Yeah. So Vegas probably won't happen for me.
It's funny because Vegas is like the only affordable place to fly to from Montana. It's like $60 one way.
What?
Yeah, we have like Allegiant that flies there and they just fly for super cheap. And so it's actually one of the most affordable for us to go to, which is really cool.
Wow. I don't know. Were any of you there for the Las Vegas, GP Vegas?
I was, yeah.
I was.
Okay. I heard that Helene had smuggled boxes of Modern Masters and you had a ladies only draft. Confirm or deny?
Yeah, I participated in that. I drafted a really sweet Thalid's deck, and it was a lot of fun.
Nice. I wonder if she'll do that again for you guys this year.
I hope so. Fingers crossed.
I love that about Wizards, folks. I know one thing I learned when I was at the Community Cup is they just have product on them. Like, just at the drop of a hat. Like, you could be at Perkins having a skillet, and someone will be like, I've got a box. Who wants to draft? Like, you don't even see it on them. It's like it magically just comes out of them. Like, where did that box come from? And it's astounding.
They've got, like, those secret pockets that are super deep.
Either that or it reminds me of the, I don't know if any of you are going to get this, but do you remember the really old Link and Zelda cartoons?
No.
Okay. I know I'm dating myself here. I'm so sorry. But anyway, so back in the day, there was a Link and Zelda cartoon. You at least know the video game Zelda, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know how far back I had to go. So, but Link would, when Link would carry items with him, he would pull them out of his pocket and they'd be really, really small. Mm-hmm. So that they could fit in his pocket, and then he'd put them in his hand and they would just whoop and they would grow. So that's what I imagined the boxes to be. They're just little charms and then whoop, it's a box. So the other cool thing, Modern Masters 2 Magic Origins, that is going to be the last core set, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And we got the reveal of double face cards, specifically the Planeswalkers. What do we think about that? Hype?
They look really cool to me.
Yeah.
They look a
Someone mentioned it on Reddit a couple of months ago that they thought that could be a possibility, and everyone's like, it'll never happen. Well, I guess it did.
Why not just take Planeswalkers and the flip cards and jam them all into one? I don't know why you wouldn't.
I know, right? So they released the first Planeswalker, Liliana, Heretical Healer. Heretical? Heretical, Hallie? How do we do that?
Heretical?
Heretical. Okay, just making sure. So she's legendary creature, human cleric. She has the same casting cost as Liliana of the Veil, 1 and 2 black. 2/3 lifelink. And whenever another non-Tolkien creature you control dies, exile Liliana, heretical healer, then return her to the battlefield transformed under her owner's control. If you do, put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield. And then you flip her, and she's Liliana, Defiant Necromancer, and she starts off with her usual everybody discard ability. Then there's returning creatures from the graveyard shenanigans, and then there's an emblem. I like her. I think she's cool.
Yeah,
I think she's super sweet.
Yeah,
I think it'll be fun to play with. One weird thought I had, though, when they revealed that was they said she planeswalks into the exile zone. And all I could envision at that moment was her moonwalking all Michael Jackson-esque into the exile zone, flipping out and saying, "Who's bad?"
Oh, my God.
It was very strange. I was watching the stream. I'm like, oh, my God.
Somebody call Dave Lee. Have him draw that comic.
I do think it's interesting, though, that, you know, because we've never really known much about Liliana, and she's always been sold as sort of this femme fatale. And I do feel like, I mean, I love the card, but it's interesting how they're going with, like, that usual trope of, like, you know, the sweet, fully clothed, virginal healer, and then something goes wrong, and she's skanky, and she's taken off the clothes, and she's raising the dead, and raw, and it just felt kind of, it didn't feel like new ground to me, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I would
agree with that.
Because they're really pouring it on thick. Like, you look at the heretical healer, and she's, like, feeding birds, and, you know, it's just, they're really, you know, green pastures, and it's like, oh, man.
I like her healer thing. I was thinking that we would see her just as a creature, not as a planeswalker, before this was revealed, but, yeah, I thought she'd just be, like, a legendary and do something, but obviously they took that and made her do something more. I was thinking.
Did you all happen to see the little girl Mia who cosplayed as Liliana Heretical Healer, and the Wizards account put her all over their Twitter feed?
That was so cute.
She is a cutie. I don't know if you follow her dad. Her dad is Swedebit on Twitter, Swedebit. And that little girl is something special. Like, she's wicked smart. I think she's like 8 or 9.
Mm-hmm.
She wins game days, and she's very good friends with Frank Lepore. She loves Melissa DeTora. That little girl's going to be something someday. Like, she's just such a joy to watch.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So then the other big reveal, which I know everybody was really looking forward to, was Battle for Zendikar. We are going back to Zendikar.
Yes.
Thoughts on that?
It was actually kind of funny for me, just like, as someone who lives in the Pacific Northwest and gets to interact with Wizards employees all the time, and you know how, like, they can't really talk about the upcoming sets, but whenever you would ask Wizards employees about, like, sort of, like, what's coming up next, they would all be like, the set after cons is going to be really, really good. Like, I can't tell you what it is, but it's really awesome. And it seemed like... I just wanted to know sort of like what the hype was, and people started speculating, like, are we going back to some world that we all know and love? And it turns out we are. So it was pretty cool.
Were any of you around for Zendikar the first time around?
Nope.
I was not.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't either.
Which is unfortunate, because I don't know if it was like actually a fun set besides the fetch lands and obviously the full arts. I think those are even more exciting than the fetches to me, but
yeah,
I don't know if it was like a good draft set or what.
It is. It's one of the few sets that I've gone back and drafted. And if you like fast, like aggressive draft formats, it's one of the best.
You can catch it sometimes on MTGO. Every once in a while, they have the flashback drafts. And whenever they have the Zendikar and the Eldrazi sets, they're super, super fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I may have to check that out.
Yeah, I wasn't around for Zendikar the first time either, but from playing Modern, I've seen how so many of those cards have affected Modern, so I'm interested to see if the power level is going to be anything close to that, if it'll shake up all of the formats like Khan's Block has. That's what I'm excited about.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, it seems like it will, because the power level just keeps going up, so it seems like it'll be really fun. But full arts, I'm really excited for full arts.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I'm hoping that that's a thing.
Yeah, that would be nice. And then, of course, there's always talk about, you know, fetch lands, whether or not we'll get the remaining 5 or however many are left. And I think that's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's pretty 100% to me, I guess. I mean, I don't know how you go back to Zendikar and not release the other fetches, especially with the big push on Modern.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do you guys think of the current storyline with Dragons of Tark here, with the, you know, how everything's changed so far? Have you been keeping up with any of that?
A little bit. I was actually curious because I was reading, there was a card spoiled recently called Haven of the Spirit Dragon, that said that you could return an Ugin Planeswalker card from your graveyard to your hand or something like that. Mm. And what I found the wording really interesting, and I'm wondering, like, if we're going to see another Ugin Planeswalker printed in Battle for Zendikar or in that block.
Mm. That's interesting. Because, yeah, I mean, you figure Sarkon has changed with what's happened. So, like, we had Sarkon the Dragon Speaker. You know, he went back in time. He did his thing. Now you have Sarkon Unbroken. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be you know, safe to assume or normal to assume that Ugin would somehow change through that process too.
Right.
That's not bad. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, so overall I was pretty happy with PAX. I was excited about the spoilers, and I just can't wait to actually be able to play with these cards.
Right.
Yeah. What are you guys going to do for your pre-release PAX?
Oh, man. You mean the one coming up in 2 weeks?
Yeah. It's so fast.
Yeah, right?
I can't believe it's already happening.
There wasn't... How much time was it between Fate and now? Like, what, 6 weeks?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, I think they have to start narrowing the gap down just because they're going to start having that new release schedule where it's like large set, small set, on and on and on, like no break for core sets. So it seemed like in order to balance the whole year out, they would have to give us like more time for the large sets and less time for the small sets. So it seems like we're going to see this just in the future going forward.
So every day will be spoiler day, basically.
I hope so. That's awesome.
In terms of the pre-release, I think I'll probably go Silumgar. That's just how I see myself going. I know Chris and I talked about doing another Two-Headed Giant together because that was fun. Mm-hmm. So what about you guys?
I'm going to four of them. So
four?
Yeah.
Wow.
So like Saturday morning, Sunday afternoon, and then Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon. I don't know. Like I'll pick four of them. I don't know which one I'm not going to do. But the spin down dice look nice, so at least we'll get a full set of those between me and my boyfriend.
Are you training for this? Like sit ups and
like fasting if you don't have time to get food and all sorts of things.
Sort of. It is an endurance test for sure, but like I go to a lot of pre releases. Like if you've listened to the spoiler shows that Erin and I have done, like she always asks me at the end, like, so how many are you going to? Like, are you gonna cut back this time? And I'm like, no, I'm going to four again. Haven't learned.
I've been seeing people starting to carry these. Oh God, I can't think of the official name for it, but it's a pouch almost where you can store a thermos or what have you, and then there's a straw that you can wind around your shoulder and then put in your mouth, and it just a camel pack, I think it is, or something
like
that.
Oh yeah, camel pack. Yeah, I've seen.
Yeah, you're gonna need one of those.
I just bring a really large water bottle.
I just want to be there for like the physical. I want to see like the physical devolution where like Hallie shows up all nice, her hair is combed, maybe she's a little eyeliner on, she's looking nice, and then by Sunday there's like gum in her hair, her hair is messed up, her eyelash is like half off, and she's just ragged.
Oh God.
I guess you'll have to take pictures and just right. Record the process.
Time-lapse footage.
Like I don't take selfies just as like a general rule, but I'll have to get like my friend Kale to take pictures of me or something and put them on the internet.
I think it's necessary.
Yeah, I think so. So the other big event this past weekend was Grand Prix Miami, which was hosted by Star City Games. Seems like there was a really good turnout. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple of breakout moments. First up, Green White Devotion had its coming out party. Oh, what was that?
Sorry, I heard your sigh, and I'm just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Were you watching it at all?
I did see a... Are we talking about basically Sam Black and, like, Sam Black's deck? In Sam, the mirror. I saw the mirror.
Yeah, there was the mirror with Sam Black, and then there were two decks in the finals that did not include Sam Black, and the finals were not timed.
How long did it take?
If I remember correctly, game one pushed about 2 hours.
Oh, geez. Really?
Yeah. What was that, you guys?
It's a deck I don't want to play against, that's for sure. Seems like we need a new way to win that's not damage-based if that's going to be running around.
I mean, did you see those life totals? 200, 300, 400.
Someone showed me, you know the Twitter account Mishra's Photoshop?
Yes, love them.
So someone showed me a Mishra's Photoshop of the board state, and it said that the life totals were correct, but the board was obviously Photoshopped with, like, manifest everywhere. But the life totals were, like, 115 to, like, 80-something. Mm-hmm. I was just like, are you kidding me? Like, this was an actual match.
Maybe Erebos will find its place.
Oh, that, good call. Good call, Katie.
Blue-black control with Erebos seems fine.
Did you all see this coming? Like, I know Sam Black wrote about the deck, and he's written about decks before that haven't always taken off, and that card certainly snuck under my radar, Master of the Unseen. I mean, did you think this was possible?
Not really, honestly. Like, that card was really annoying to play against in Sealed. But, like, I didn't really think it would take off in Standard like it has. Like, we haven't seen a lot of Manifest in Standard other than, like, Whisperwood Elemental in, like, the green ramp decks.
Do you think that part of the problem is also that we just really haven't seen enough control in the format, and that's why shenanigans like this are happening?
I think that they're just, I can't remember who was talking about it, but there just hasn't really been a lot of time to brew, like, in the past few months, it feels like. Mm-hmm. So I think we're just now starting to see decks that are coming at Standard from a different angle, but without having time to try them all out before, you know, Dragons is, like, almost upon us and everything will change again.
Right.
I don't think we've seen, like, the full potential of this Standard block yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like the decks have been, you know, the nice thing about the Standard is it feels like, you know, the decks have been, we've seen a lot of decks since Cons has come out, but it feels like they're, like, we don't talk about Sidisi Whip anymore. We really don't talk about green-black Constellation anymore. You know, I feel like they're, you know, they're hot for a minute and then they're not, and I feel like we're just constantly rotating through flavors of the week.
I think that's why people like Gerard Fabiano are doing so well. Like, he just has something new every week and just hits the format and does well. Like, he just keeps innovating and keeps winning, and I think that that's really good for the format.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't there an Abzan Whip deck in top 8?
I don't think so. Much of the top 8 was aggro decks, if I remember correctly. Even mono red aggro made it in.
Right. I thought I saw a couple of mono red aggro decks and a couple of green white devotion decks, but I thought there was an Abzan Whip deck also.
There was an Abzan aggro deck.
Okay, maybe I'm misremembering. I'll have to look into it.
That's okay. That Andrew Boswell, he's a cutie. You know, like, I'm devoted to Reed Duke. Reed Duke is bae, and he's friends with Reed Duke, so that's blasphemy right there. But man, that he's a cutie.
I haven't seen him yet.
Yeah, he made top 8 with his Abzan aggro deck, and he had his little sleeveless T-shirt on, and he's a ceramic artist. Like, he makes pottery for a living. That's romantic.
Everybody loves an artist.
Right? I mean, think about it. You know, you're sitting at the wheel and you're like, you know, what does this do? And then he sits behind you and he's like, I'll show you. And then it's like Ghost, the movie Ghost. He sits behind you and helps you. The clay is in your hands and you look over your shoulder and the music starts. No? Am I alone in this? I'm alone in this. Okay. So it's been interesting seeing people react to the green-white devotion deck, because a lot of people are thinking the answer is control, and it seemed like a lot of people were writing about control today. Andrea Mengucci released his version of a blue-black control deck. Other people were talking about it. I mean, do we think that's even going to help? Because they've got Whisperwood Elemental, which is what they're really hiding behind.
Does Perilous Vault help?
Yeah, because it exiles.
Yes.
Yeah, or you could counter.
The blue-black control, you know, was on Vault or multiple vaults for a long time, and then it kind of got away from it. And I think now with Whisperwood Elemental, vault needs to reappear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so I was even considering playing blue-black control, but I have a problem playing control decks.
Mm-hmm. I've also heard some people talking about playing Anger of the Gods just to, like, clear out all of those little manifests. Like, that could be helpful, too.
Yeah, that card is kind of underplayed right now, especially with red-white aggro. You'd think... I haven't seen it in any of those lists at all.
Yeah, well, because most of the red-white aggro decks are just sort of jamming, like... Seekers and Rabble Masters, and like it's really hard to sort of change gears and like put Anger of the Gods in that kind of deck also. So like I was playing that deck for a while, and I would bring in like, you know, Arc Lightnings and things like that for the mirror, but never really like changing gears into control fully.
Another incident at the GP, which caused a lot of controversy, was the Thoughtseize incident. I sent you all a link to a video. For those who are not aware, there was a incident at the GP where two people were playing against each other, and one cast Thoughtseize against his opponent. His opponent appeared to place his cards on the table, appeared to fan them out. If you look really closely, though, one of the cards was hidden under another card. Mm-hmm. So the opponent only had 5 cards to choose from, when in reality his opponent actually had 6 cards. People in Twitch noticed it, the detectives at Reddit noticed it, and this opened up a lot of discussion about whether or not that is legal, about whether or not that is right. You all watched the video, what did you think?
I watched it multiple times, and some things that I thought about while I was watching it was... He was just flicking through his hand before he got Thoughtseize, so how could he not see the hero's downfall in his hand? Mm-hmm. Puts the cards down, and it looks like he kept the cards on the left side, secured kind of tight in with like his left index finger. Then when he picks them up, he swoops them off at kind of a strange angle with the cards coming in from right to left. And when he picks up his hand again, how does he not notice it a second time? I felt like... his next draw from the top seemed a little overdramatic. Like, he looked at that card for so long before he played his land. Mm-hmm. And I know that intent is important based on the video, but personally, to me, I just can't see how it wasn't his intent to cheat. If it had been me and I didn't see the downfall until I picked up my hand again, I'd be like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, and panicking and then calling a judge on myself. It's possible he realized it and was like, oh God, I'm on stream. Everyone saw this. What do I do now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, you know, it's hard to tell whether or not laying him down like that was intentional. But after you pick him up and realize it, I feel like he should have done something else. Mm-hmm. Unless he was like, well, it was his fault for not seeing it, which, you know, some people think that's how you play the game, so... Whether or not that's... I don't feel like that should be legal, but I haven't really looked at any of the stuff on the judge side of whether or not, like, the discussion going on behind it. Does anybody know if he got talked to, like, later that day or anything?
I don't know, no.
Well, on a Reddit thread, I believe that the judge that was involved was in the thread, saying that, you know, he stood by his decision, that the intent... that he felt was not for him to have cheated or something like that. I just kind of briefly scrolled through the comments, but it looked like I said, the judge that was involved was on there and seemed to think that there was nothing shady about it.
Wow. I mean, that guy was good, though. Like, I had to watch that video 3 or 4 times to see what people were talking about. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you, Chris. I don't see how you could not know that, or more importantly, how you could not... you know, wanted to notice it. Like, I'm like you, where even if I drop a card on the floor, I'm usually throwing up my hands going, I'm not a cheater! Yeah. And I look at the floor and I make sure that my opponent sees me, and I will keep one hand above the table, and I will go out of my way to prove that I'm not doing anything. And it was just so seamless. It was so smooth, and there was no... I don't see how it couldn't be. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure the judge did talk to him, and based on what they say, that affects a lot, and so, I don't know. It did seem pretty sketchy just from watching that clip.
I never even thought to do such a thing where, like, you know, I've been playing for, you know, a while, and, you know, that's always been one of those things you just sort of suck it up and show your hand. You may not like it, but you're like, oh, here you go. And it never occurred to me to, I have had people, if I cast Inquisition of Kozilek against them, for example, I've had people try to not show me cards or try to push cards aside that I can't take. So, like, let's say if I cast Inquisition and they've got a couple four drops, they'll put the four drops like farther away and then just show me what I can possibly take. And I always think that's really strange too.
I have done that. Like, if someone casts like Despise or like Inquisition or Duress, like I will definitely like lay all of my cards out like clearly in front of my opponent, but I'll sometimes like put them in two piles. Like, here are your options and here are my other cards. I don't know. Like, I never thought that there may be anything sketchy about that. Like, Katie, what do you like? Have you dealt with anything like that before?
I feel like if you're laying them all out, unlike the Thoughtseize guy, if you're laying them all out, you can pile them up however you want. But that's just like my basic opinion. If you're trying to intentionally hide them, then that's going to be an issue. Like, I don't know. But you know, I guess I sort my cards when I like, here are my lands, here's my other things that you can take with Thoughtseize or whatever too. I guess I don't really have a problem with that, but I think some people think maybe they can get a new player by being like, these are the only ones you can take, so you don't need to look at these or whatever it may be.
I've also had people try to throw me off by starting to discard what they think I'm going to choose. So, like, they'll show me their hand. Like, they'll lay the hand down. I can see all the cards. And then they'll go, oh, I know what you're taking. And I'll be like, whoa, 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 come back. Like, no, I actually want this one instead. And
Yeah, there was a time at like at a 4K that my opponent did that to me, and like I had to like, I don't know, we had to get judges involved because like he threw a card in his graveyard and like started taking his turn, and I was like, whoa, 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 like I'm not done. Like, that is not the card I wanted to take. So yeah, that's a pet peeve of mine.
I mean, it sounds like a really cut and dry thing to me. I mean, these cards say, you know, look at your opponent's hand or your opponent reveals their hand. That's your whole hand. Like, you don't get to hide anything. So it doesn't seem like it should be that much of an issue.
Thoughtseize is worse if you can only look at half their hand.
Right? That's the appeal. So speaking of events, Katie, when we were coming up with topics for this week's show, you mentioned that you had a spicy little modern brew that you took to a top four finish.
Yes, I
Tell us
did.
about it.
So last week I talked about trying out the Esper deck in Modern that had like Tassigurs and Monastery Mentors and Lingering Souls. And I basically decided that it just wasn't fast enough with its removal. And I've been playing blue white red for a long time, but I was like, you know, Lightning Bolt's not very good. So I kind of just took them and smushed them all together and made a four color control deck. And I played Crackling Doom, which I know Jeff Hoogland has been a fan of. But instead of playing creatures, like I just played hard control. And I also played Lingering Souls, and I also played Murderous Cut. And the deck was awesome. I beat like three Emrakuls. I beat Boggles, which is usually a really bad matchup. I lost to Tron, even though I beat his Emrakuls, so that was unfortunate. But yeah, I went to top four. I lost in the mirror to a blue-white control deck who boarded into Geists, which I just had no way to deal with the way I boarded, so that was unfortunate. But the prizes were really good. First place was a set of the San Diego Comic-Con Planeswalkers.
Ooh, nice.
And then second place was a sealed box of Modern Masters. And then third and fourth were the anthologies, like
Wow.
two
Oh,
sets of
cool.
anthologies. And then they had packs for fifth through eighth. So it's pretty
Nice.
successful, and I really, really liked it. The land base was difficult, but kind of fun because it was challenging in a different way than I was used to. But yeah, the deck was really sweet. I think Crackling Doom is really well positioned right now.
So you said that you were running more of a hard control build. Were you running any creatures at all?
Does Gideon count as a creature? I played a Gideon and a Kronos and a Batterskull and four Snapcasters, and those were the only creatures.
And those were all in the main?
Yes.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. And then I had a Baneslayer angel in the board, but I'm not sold on him as a, her. I guess it's a her. Her as a threat yet. But yeah, it was really sweet.
It's funny that you mentioned Baneslayer Angel, because when I was getting ready for SCG Baltimore, I was torn between playing Abzan, which I know really well, and playing Lone Pox, and Drew Levin had left a comment on my Facebook, and he's like, Abzan with Baneslayer Angel. And I was like, Drew Levin, I'm like, no, what are you talking about? And he's like, trust me. He's like, Baneslayer Angel is everything. And I didn't listen to him. I played Lone Pox. I did terribly. But when I go to Eternal Extravaganza this weekend, I'm going to be playing Abzan, and I'm going to have two Baneslayer in the main, and we're going to see what the fuss is all about, because people who love the card love it, and I've never had a chance to play with it, and I need to see if they're right.
Are you going to be playing, like, Lingering Souls and Rhino?
Yes, it's Abzan midrange. I'm not really so hard on the souls. Like, I'm only running two souls. I don't want to be one of those people that's like, four souls in Gavinny Township. No, please, let's not. So I'm more of the old-school attrition-y style. So, like, I am playing with my Tectonic Edges so that I can destroy your Gavinny Townships. I'm trying to be more anti-spirits while still being spirits of my own. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I played two souls, and I thought that was a good number.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems good, because I think if you can attack them with your 1/1s and win, that's good, and if you can attack them with your rhinos and win, that's good.
Yeah.
Like, I think just coming at them from different angles is where you want to be at.
Yeah, I was on the receiving end of the Baneslayer Angel when I was in Baltimore, and that kind of gave me a sneak preview as to how good the card was, where he was playing Blue Eye Control, I was on Lone Pox, and he goes, Baneslayer Angel, and I was like, oh, I've heard about that card. Ow. Oh, your life total. Yeah, your life total is so high. Oh, maybe I should be using that card. Okay, thanks. That was a fun little moment. I know I've been playing Lone Pox lately. I really, really enjoy it. The problem I have with Lone Pox is I feel like it's good against the popular decks. I don't feel like it's any good against the rogue deck. So, like, if you give me Affinity, you give me Tron, you know, you give me Burn. It has a great Burn matchup, which I love. But you give me, like, Martyr Proc, and I'm like, shit. Or if you give me Mono Blue Tron, I don't feel like I have much of a game plan against those things. So if I can only just play the popular decks, I'd be fine. But I don't feel like I have much game against the unknown decks that come out of nowhere. Which you can't really, you know, risk in Modern, because Modern's such a diverse but stale format, as we said last time. You have to be prepared for those weird decks to come at you, and I just don't think, you know, that's possible with Lone Pox. But I love it. So.
Mm-hmm.
So the other day, I discovered an article on Gathering Magic written by, oh God, a Haley someone? Maybe we've heard of her. Santos? Haley Santo?
Nope,
yeah.
I haven't heard of her.
No. It was Hallie Santo, our lovely friend Hallie, wrote a post about relationships and what it's like dating and socializing while playing Magic and being on the grind. Hallie, tell me a little bit about this article.
Yeah, so this was just sort of something that I pitched to Stibbs kind of on a whim, just because a bunch of people kept coming up to me and asking me to write an article about relationships. One of my friends had gone to a PPTQ on Valentine's Day and apparently got into a conversation with one of the more well-known local players and was like, so what are you doing here on Valentine's Day? Don't you have a girlfriend? And this other player apparently said something to him like, well, my girlfriend understands how important Magic is to me, and I treat her like it's Valentine's Day every day. And so she says I can play Magic all the time, like whenever I want. So this friend like came back to me and was like, yeah, like, could you write an article about relationship advice? Because I feel like I need relationship advice, like playing Magic. I was like, okay, sure. I'll see if my editor will buy it. And like, I pitched it to Stibbs, and he was just sort of like, if you go about it the right way, I'm sure it'll turn out fine. So I wrote a bunch of drafts. And I mean, the basic point I made is that like, compromise and communication are really important in any relationship, and especially when you're as committed to something like Magic as, you know, some grinders are. And having a partner who understands the game, maybe even plays the game themselves, can be a big help, because they sort of understand what you're going through. So those are the points that I made, and I wanted to make it not just about romantic relationships, but about your relationships with friends and family also, because it's something that consumes all of our lives and affects us all and affects all of our relationships. So I just wanted to write about that and how I deal with it.
Mm-hmm. And you actually met your boyfriend through a magic Facebook group, right?
Yeah, I did. He posted about like wanting to trade for some cards like over 2 years ago. And I just responded because he was like, I want a consuming aberration for my Dimir Mill deck. And I was like, well, I have no use for that card, so sure, I'll trade it to you. And it's funny because, I mean, I kind of make him out to be super casual, and like he is to a certain extent. Like, he really enjoys playing Commander. He really enjoys like wacky draft decks. But he is also fairly competitive in his own way. We just approached the game slightly differently. And if we hadn't approached the game differently, then we wouldn't have met in the first place. So I'm really grateful for, you know, the differences we have and for the fact that we can respectfully disagree with each other about things.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that you could date somebody who was, you mentioned the different levels of competition. Like, I think of you as being fairly competitive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you think that you could date somebody who was as competitive as you or more so?
It would depend on a lot of things. I mean, the reason why I think my relationship works right now is because we're both, I don't know, like fairly reasonable people, and we're good at communicating. We're both like fairly like even tempered, and we don't really get too stressed out in like stressful situations like playing in tournaments. I think like just sort of being aware of how the game affects you, like how winning and losing affects you, and like how much space you need when you're in a tournament setting is really important for determining like how that's going to affect your relationships with other people. Like I have examples of like, you know, people I know who are dating other grinders and it's going well for them. And I've seen people date other grinders and it hasn't worked well. And it's really just sort of like how your personality meshes with another person's.
I think you also mentioned something else, being able to be happy for them when you're not the one doing well.
Yeah.
That's a big thing too.
Yeah. That was sort of the impetus for writing the article. Like there was a PPTQ on Valentine's Day. Obviously one of my friends went to it. And I did want to go, but my boyfriend really wanted to go to game day and I really wanted to spend the day with him. And like, there was another PPTQ like the day after. So I was just like, you know what? I'll go and play in my competitive event tomorrow. And like today, like I'm just going to support you because you've supported me when I've gone to big tournaments. You know, I'm going to, you know, do something for you. So I went to game day with him and, you know, I didn't do so well. He did really well. He made it to the finals. He was really happy and I was really happy for him. Like, it was kind of bittersweet, like getting ninth and like not getting whatever the promo was or whatever. Or like just not making top eight. Like I do enjoy making top eight, but like, I don't know. It wasn't my tournament. Like at the end of the day, it was his tournament. I wouldn't have wanted to face him in the finals. You know, I was really happy event. Like once I stepped back and thought about it, I was happy with how it turned out.
Katie and Chris, what have your experiences been? Like, do you date other Magic players? Like what do you think?
Right now I am dating someone else that does play Magic. He's not super competitive. We like to go to tournaments together separately. But because of work schedules and other things, both of us aren't, you know, super serious right now. We are supportive of each other about playing Magic. I can see the whole not being happy for someone's success sometimes. Because sometimes I'll beat myself up really badly about why did I do so poorly? And, you know, he started playing more seriously after I did. Why do I feel like he's better than me? And I think it's only because of our relationship that I think that way. Because when I dated my ex-boyfriend, we would play Warhammer 40K together and he would absolutely destroy me. And I would take it really personal, I think, because of our relationship. I mean, my current boyfriend and I, we can't really play Magic together peacefully. without one of us getting very angsty or angry just about how the game went or, you know, something like that. And I want us to get back to a place where we can play together. I just think I'm always in, you know, game face mode, and maybe I need to get out of that a little bit.
It's kind of hard now because I don't know if I want to date a Magic player again, but I don't know how I could date somebody that doesn't understand how big of a deal Magic is to me. Like, you know, when I apply for a new job, I'm like, I'm not available Friday nights or weekends. Like, that's just part of my schedule, and it's not something that I'm willing to give up for a lot of things. And so somebody else has to be okay with me, like, going on road trips every single weekend and playing Magic on Friday nights, because that's just something I like to do in my spare time. And so I'm not sure dating somebody who doesn't play Magic, like, how well that would work. I guess I haven't done that yet since I've started being so competitive, so I haven't really crossed that bridge, but that seems really difficult.
What do you think about stories that we hear about couples who have to play each other, there's something important on the line, and one of them drops, or one of them, you know, draws that the other person can get in? Like, do you think that's a reasonable expectation for couples to have, or do you think that they should be playing it out?
I don't know.
Like, would you expect your partner to do that for you, or would you do that for them?
I don't know. Like, I don't really expect anything. I know my boyfriend and I have had to play each other a couple of times, but it's never been at anything bigger than, like, an FNM or, like, a Lady Planeswalker Society tournament. So he'll usually just, like, concede to me, and I'll be like, no, seriously, we should play this out. And he'll be like, come on, like, it's the last round. Like, we should go home. And I'll be like, fine, I'm tired anyway. So, like, if there were something on the line, I think both of us would probably want to play it out. Like, if I had to guess, like, I think, like, I would want to play it out. He probably would also.
I think at anything bigger than an FNM, I would never expect the other person to concede to me or do anything that might put them out of contention. I know at FNMs, if you're like, you know, if we're only cutting to a top four instead of a top eight, I've definitely conceded to him and he's conceded to me, and we kind of just switch off if that situation is going to arise. But other than that, we would never put ourselves out of the running, I don't think, for the other person. But that's just kind of how our relationship is.
Would you do it, Chris?
No. If it was a high level tournament, I don't think either of us would. I know that there would be a part of him that would want to just concede to me because I know how much he cares about me. But I think that his competitive nature as well would be like, you know what, let's just see what happens. Either way, we're in a relationship together, you know, whatever prize, either he or I would win. If anything at all, we would share. So really at the end of the day, both of us win, I guess. So, I mean, he's conceded to me at FNM before, or we'll play each other and I'll be like, you know what, let's just see how it goes. And then depending on what happens, even if he beats me, you know, out of three, sometimes he'll be like, you know what, it's your turn. You know, you go and take this. You haven't been doing so well lately, or I know this means a lot to you, and he'll just let me have it. At the end of the day, we pull our cards together, so I'm not too upset about it.
Oh, you share cards.
Indeed.
Okay. I've always wondered, it's always fun trying to trade with couples who share cards, because, like, you'll be trading with one half of the couple and the other half will be like, oh, I gotta find them to see if they want me to trade this. We might need this. I think it's really cute. As a single person, it's cute to watch.
Yeah, we definitely do that. Like, if Robert's making a trade, like, he'll text me and be like, hey, does this sound good to you? And, like, 9 times out of 10, I'm just like, shrug, sure.
Well, we just had a thing recently because we had 2 foil Ugins. And we didn't really need them. We felt that, you know, we would trade them away for something important. So the first one we traded away for some cards that he wanted. Initially, I was kind of upset because I didn't really know what it was traded for. And I didn't really get anything out of it myself. So I was like, well, I guess it's okay. You know, you got some cards you needed. Fine. And then the second one he traded for a Liliana with Veil for me. So it all worked out, I guess, in the end.
I have to say, I agree with you in that I've come to the realization that I need to date somebody who is geeky and occupies some space in the geek continuum. It doesn't necessarily have to be magic. They can geek for coding or they can geek for console games, but I just feel like nerds do better when they date other nerds. And I always see these couples where one person is super nerdy, the other person has no nerdy inclinations whatsoever, and I'm just amazed that they make it work because it's just they're so different. And that's not to say that they don't love each other or nothing spiteful like that, but I could not see myself being in that situation. Like, you know, somebody who just doesn't understand. I dated somebody 3 years ago who was, he was the type of person who felt like you should age out of playing games. So, you know, so I was raiding at the time. I was playing World of Warcraft, and I would get frustrated at WoW, and he would be like, "You're 29. Why are you still raiding? Like, you have a career. Like, what are you doing?" And I was like, "Why? There's an age limit on this? Like, what's going on?" So he really wasn't able to relate to me when I would get excited about games, and he also didn't understand Magic. Like, I would go to a pre-release, which was the Avacyn Restored pre-release, and then the next pre-release would come, and he would say, "But you just went to a pre-release. That was Avacyn Restored. This is Magic 2013. Like, they're different pre-releases." And he didn't understand that. He didn't understand flying four states away to go to a Grand Prix. He didn't get it. And there were so many fights over that, you know, and it was something that I thought, had I been dating another Magic player, they would have gotten it. There would have never been any sort of discussion about it. But to date a Muggle... It just didn't work, and it sounds like something so small, but I really think the next time around you've gotta geek something or you've gotta be a Magic player because it's just hard not to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's also difficult dating somebody when you are a bit of a public figure, mm-hmm. because you do, you know, it's weird, you know, they don't sign up for what you sign up for when you agree to be a podcaster or a blogger. And especially if you're the type of person who puts your business out there as part of your, you know, you write about things from the heart, you know, if you're trying to date somebody, they may not want you to talk about them or they may not want to be a part of that. And so you have to honor that, but still let people in like you do, mm-hmm. you know? And that's been a conversation I've had with boyfriends before is, "You're not going to write about me, are you?" And I'm like, "Well, that's what I do." And they've explicitly said, "I would really like it if you did not talk about us or if you did not." And you know, having them understand, like you said, Katie, you know, F&M, Friday nights out. I need Friday nights. Having to record a podcast and spending a day recording, a day editing, that's something anybody I date is going to have to be okay with. And that can be difficult to find. Mm-hmm. So other than that, was there anything else you wanted to get off our chests that's been happening this past week?
Nothing too exciting. I made Adrian Sullivan's Blue-Red Counter Burn deck last Friday, so I plan on playing it for FNM this week, since I haven't been in, like, 3 weeks. So,
I love him.
I know, he's so nice.
He is. Yeah, I'm going to Eternal Extravaganza in Philadelphia, and yes, I will call it Extravaganza every time, because I've been watching too much Drag Race, and it should be a really good time. I'm going to be staying with my friends Katie and Matt, and I get to see my friend Genesodes, and I'm going to be playing lots of Modern. There's going to be Legacy happening there, Vintage. I don't think I've ever... It's been a while since I've been in the same room as Vintage taking place, and it should be a really, really good time. I'm super excited.
Sweet.
Do any of you guys play Legacy? I don't play any Legacy.
I do a little bit.
No, I'd like to.
I'm too poor.
Exactly. Candelabra of Thanos is not a cheap cardio.
It took me a really long time to save up for my Legacy deck, though. Like, it took, like, a year of drafting and then selling all of my draft rares back to the store to eventually get, like, all of the dual lands that I need. And then, like, I built Blue Red Delver and then Treasure Cruise got banned. So then I was just like, womp, womp, what do I do now? So now I have Sultai Delver, like, almost entirely built. So I'm going to take that to a Legacy event pretty soon.
Wow. Yeah, we don't have much of a legacy scene here. I would love to get into it. We have one legacy night a week, which is on a Wednesday, and we record on a Wednesday. And even then, it's like the same 10 or 12 people, so it would feel like a very inbred kind of meta. And, you know, there's just not enough places to play it, where if I knew that I could get, like, some regular practice, I would probably invest in it. But I just don't – I wouldn't have a chance to play it enough to really get into it.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the good things about Seattle. We have a really good legacy scene here. Like, if you go to Card Kingdom on a Monday night, there are like 40 people playing legacy. So it's really cool. Like, it's a really good, like, still pretty tight-knit community. And everyone's looking forward to the legacy GP that's going to be here in November. So that's going to be fun.
Yeah.
It is in Seattle.
It's technically in Tacoma. It's GP Seattle Tacoma, which takes place in Tacoma, even though it says Seattle. Sort of like how, like, every time they have a GP that says Boston, it's in Worcester and, you know, stuff like that.
It's cheaper that way.
Yeah, exactly.
Ugh. Yeah. So if you were to get in a legacy, what do you think you'd play?
Well, I want to play High Tide.
I would play Blue White.
So many blue players.
Something like Stoneforge or like Counterbalance.
Yeah. I had to witness a Counterbalance deck the other day when I was in Baltimore. My friend Lexi was playing against one, and it was absurd. Like, with Sensei's Divining Top and Counterbalance, it's so unfair.
Oh, it seems so fun. That's damn.
Yeah, I would play Dredge, obviously, because I'm a graveyard girl. I love my graveyard strategy. So I would probably play Dredge, which is actually quite affordable. Like, I could afford a Dredge deck. I would just have nowhere to play it. And if I didn't play that, I would probably just play Jund. But Jund is terrible in Legacy. Like, most of the Legacy experts are like, just don't even bother, don't even think about it. But I'd like to. Like, I would play Jund in all formats if I could. But again, the land base, you know, you're paying $90 a piece for Wastelands and, you know, however much for your bayous and for all that stuff. That's too rich for my blood.
Yeah. But.
So if anybody's enjoyed the show and they want to get a hold of us, how can they get a hold of you, and how can they find you?
So I'm Hallie. I'm on Twitter at HalCanSan, HalCanSan, and you can find my writing here on Gathering Magic.
I'm Katie. You can get me on Twitter at KatieN_14 or by email at katie.neil14@gmail.com.
My name is Chris. My Twitter account is at tochris. That is TEHKRIZ. My email address is yotochris, YOTEHKRIZ @gmail.com. And I have a Tumblr, and the username is also tochris.
And I am at Original Estrus. That's ORIGINALOESTRUS. The show, I remember the show's Twitter account. It is at the girlfriend bracket, at THEGFBRACKET. We are on iTunes now, so you can subscribe to the show, leave us a review and some stars. And you can ask us questions. I'd love to eventually add a question and answer session to the show if we get any questions. And that's about it. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And we will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.